Joining us now is the poet Patrick Heron, who lives in Chapel Hill, where he creates poetry, music, software, and web art. He's recently completed his second collection of poetry entitled Hyperlustrous Purse, which is going to be coming out soon. He's the creator of Proxima.org, a website that has been featured in university design and web art curricula from Canada to India to Germany to the U.S. His poems, criticism, and textual work have been published in Jacket, Vert, Blaze, ReadMe, Rhizome.org, and a Child's Alphabet. He's also recently recorded an album of electronic music under the name of Blindfolder. Patrick.
Well, I think where John left off, I'm going to start. I want to read a poem by Charles Olson that's very important to me and I think relevant right now. This poem is called The K, and it was actually the first poem that Olson published, and it wasn't published till 1948. And you imagine that I think is an indicator of how much of a risk Black Mountain College took in making Olson the rector, for he was only barely established as a poet. I think that they definitely took a lot of risk, and they recognized his ability and went on their own judgment instead of somebody else's. And it's personally important to me, I guess. His projective verse, which I believe he wrote while he was here at Black Mountain College, was an essay that kind of transformed my view of poetry completely. And I think this poem has a lot of kinds of things that I do and I don't do consciously, but they come up in this poem. And so I just want to read this again. It's called The K. Take then my answer. There is a tide in a man, moves him to his moon, and though it drop him back, he works through ebb to mount, the run again and swell to be tumescent eye. The affairs of men remain a chief concern. We have come full circle. I shall not see the year 2000 unless I stem straight from my father's mother, break the fatal male small span. If that is what the tarot pack proposed, I shall hang out some second-story window and sing as she one unheard liturgy. Assume I shall not. Is it of such concern when what shall be already is within the moonward sea? Full circle, an end to Romans, Hippocrates, and Christians. There is a tide in the affairs of men to discern. Shallows and miseries, shadows from the cross, echo man and dull Copernican sun. Our attention is simpler. The salts and minerals of the earth return. The night has a love for throwing its shadows around a man, a bridge, a horse, the gun, a grave. And let me just give a brief introduction to some of the writing that I do, because it definitely requires some amount of explanation. I think in a very general form, I prefer questions over answers. I think that's the border between belief and memory. And we seem to be living in a world where belief is heavily favored over memory to the expense of memory. And preserving memory is a lifetime struggle and certainly essential to dealing with some of life's most difficult moments. I play a lot with identity, because identity, I think, is my main question. I'm very skeptical of the concept of the individual. That sounds unusual with me standing in front of you talking as a certain individual, but I don't think it's that simple. And I use a lot of ambiguous language and try to work on polyrhythm and lots of assonance. So without further ado, I'm going to read basically some of my poems that I think are worth reading here, and some poems that I call situationist, and others that are part of series and or translations. So this is called Platypus. If you called me a platypus, I'd consider it a platitude, neither rude nor worth a fuss. This next poem is a part of a longer poem called The World is the River Loire, Mon Amour. It's based on Hiroshima, Mon Amour. And this is the opening scene. The movie is in as much a tale of two cities and two people and two lovers, as much as it is a story of two cities and two rivers, one tragically filled with dead bodies on a certain horrible day when a nuclear bomb fell. And, well, let me start it. This part is called the Motayasu. Under Sadako streams the Loire, unnavigable and empty course, irregular light and soft pad on that harsh bed, in the cellar and then the dead. Bearing confines of paper cranes, hands are bound to fade and shadow. But what of that flash of your bright skin buried in the tumble of that dark murk? This next poem is called OX. O bordered sea of you and only you, you dash the Y. This poem is essentially about the idea that identity might just be a variable. And I use a quote from the logician Willard Van Orman Quine. He said, to be is to be the value of a variable. And I took a negative approach to exaltation here. Your space here is not your holy vault. Do not exalt, O bordered sea of you and only you. With stratagem, fence, and rampart retort, you offend. You command X yourself to defend. Add solemn song and sharpened tooth for cool, O sledded Canis lupus. Your fleece pretends the honest ruse of B. Ien XUI, your cloudy pool is airless. No breath of no pipe of light, no weighty smoke of Parsifal, Aleph, the Y. You dash Y, rock to sand. Oceanic gesture drops the sledge, oil rig platform, bite of a gem. Unknowing you may be reading by sleeping in dreams unowned. No ending in a fool in why thanks you and only you. Promiscuous jest. Aleph knows the fool is the sun, is death, is fish, is ox, is why, is strand and glass and open flame between. Like I mentioned, I write some what I call situationist or confrontational material. Some of it, a lot of it is in my proximate.org website. And it's definitely a different approach to putting the you in poems. Typically when a poet writes a poem to you, it's generally about a specific person and the idea is this is supposed to generalize universally. Well, I start from the universal and I try to get personal. So my approach is very different, and I guess it stems a lot from the video artwork of Vito Acconci, who has a lot of films where he talks to the camera, and at a certain point, you go, stop, why are you talking to me? You know, and it's a very strange, transformative moment to be confronted in media. So this is called Tender is the Right. Hi, I want to get to know you. I am so glad I found you available. I wish to shake your hand and thank you. So thanks. It's great to reach out and finally shake hands with you. I think of you often. I do. I miss you often. I often think about what it would be like to be here with you. And now here I am at last. Say, you think I'm attractive? Maybe it's the haircut? Or perhaps the shape of my nose? Oh, come on. Stop laughing. This is not funny, and you know it. You don't see my face, and I'm right here with you? Of course you do. I thought sooner or later you'd come to your senses. Sometimes I write, rarely, but I do write in traditional forms. And this is called the Blood of the Career Search. Father wanted me to join the army. Mother said I should heal the sick. Uncle asked if I could foresee my life in the body politic, or my bare ass out in church, a heretic, without shame, embarrassing the righteous, my mind a head-struck matchstick. Pursuits out of madness we discussed. A librarian read, I should kill for money. An astronomer scoped me composing music. A musician noted I should improvise cosmologies before an assassin shot me with arithmetic. A mathematician proved I must read until I am sick of empty war-torn dreams within us, of all the nightmares shared by medics. Pursuits out of sadness we discussed. Sometimes I write poems that just try to operate on the layer of logos, so the embodiment of logic, and far from me believing that logic is some kind of enslaving structure of the mind, I think that it can be incredibly freeing as well in a backwards way. And you'll be able to get a picture from this. This is called Man Eating Rice, and it was recently in a web publication called Blaze. Today I saw a man eating rice. Later I watched another man write a story about the man eating rice. Later still I saw another man so hungry he ate the paper upon which the story was written. The story of the rice and the man eating rice and the man who wrote about the man eating rice and the man eating the story about the man who was so hungry he wrote the story of the man who ate the story of the man eating rice. This next poem, there's, of course, string theory and physics, which attempts to combine all these four forces of nature. But there's another string theory out there that always struck me. It was something in a couple of Woody Allen films. There was a Love and Death and Zelig both. There's an old figure, kind of grandfather or something, who collects string. And it was always somewhat mysterious to me. But I always thought it was some kind of representation of heartstring or a preservation of something, attachment to the world. So this is called 1-3-C, What the Fuck is String Theory? String theory attaches itself to the troth that string will tether heart to mind or body to soul. String theorists often save roll so as to keep a buddle of the physical and ephemeral when cloth of breath or heart threatens to depart. Filament may avert the many versions of vital release. Ah! Don't panic! Don't panic! Oh. Hey, that worked. This is a short poem called Winter. And it moves kind of quickly. A heap of lime you borrow. The fallen down snow is neat. White sackcloth of maced ash. Still ears. You iced your cane and cracked your lip. Go forth, flat cart. Sow seed for sorrow. Okay, and this This first rotation here, I want to finish with some of my series in translation poems.
This is just a fire across the line with the last few days. Please, don't worry about the lights. They'll be turned off with the flashing lights. Just go about it. Enjoy it.
It's going to be kind of like the Pokemon show in Japan when all the kids started hallucinating when Pokemon is some kind of strobe effect. Kids went into epileptic seizures and all kinds of freaky things. I'm just going to talk a little bit about series and translations. I do write a lot of series poems, but I also write translations, and I guess that's kind of maybe sounds contradictory, but I think translation is a very broad term and includes not just translating from other languages, but also translating poems from your own language or even other events from your own culture. This first piece is one of those sorts of translation. It's from a longer poem. It's a dramatic poem that somewhat hybridizes the characters of Oedipus, of Colonus, and Ahab, two very cheery individuals, obviously. This is the end of this character's life, and this title is very arbitrary here. But this is his speech. The character is blind and on an island in the middle of the ocean, and he struggles with wanting to swim back to regain control. But swimming back, of course, is certain death for him. So it becomes a metaphor for suicide or giving up. He is an old man, and he has nothing except for his memories. I am exiled in the twilight. The gods cast their scorn upon me. My silent wish, material in one late moment. Can I not conjure the form of words I imagine? Oh, carry me away as this bloodied pendulum swings. My daughters fade from my grasp. No more crown for me, nor grip of reins. Awash, my lungs filling in a black sea, embracing this death robed in a myth of endless pleasure. How I laugh at a flower resting on a dead man's plot. The white of my teeth will be all that will remain to flash my spite. They will fall slowly to the watery floor. Your gods shall remain nameless. Horses shall wear your titles, and dogs shall don your robes until this dark dream delivers a rose. Yes, hounds howl more sense than your clacking utterances. Suffocate this kingly refuse. Go on. My blood boils and sinews burst, choking my sight and breath under the heave of water, salt, and krill. My thorn-cut hands, see here, held under your oracle, quietly soak in the red waves that are forever mine. This is a series called Sex. For you dirty-minded people, that's the number 6 in German. It's a 6-piece poem that's going to be appearing in a publication called Canary River that I guess is associated with the University of Oregon. And let me tell you how I made these. I took kind of penthouse forum type of writings, and I literally de-objectified them. I literally took all the nouns and left the verbs. And I returned a couple of objects, but they're very generic. There's the word line and pants. So this is part one. And they're all 5 lines. Creep into the line to rob and skip. The moaning sounds within. Tremble. Prop up, stretch again, and jump in the pool. Spark, singe, and reach for my pants. Rubber bend. 2. Stroke a line that stands alone. Appear larger than nothing. Be limber, stretch, observe, and erect. Remove my pants, and off is on. Nothing was ever better. 3. Knock and quickly pull the line. tear at my pants and unzip, invade the forest and pulp the trees, flinch and cry out, heave, hear it staring back, a bough and curtains. 4. Want to feel the line and don't want to be anymore, needs to unhook my pants and remove, lie and dig, swirl while pushing, shatter, calm down, doesn't want to be. 5. To protect the line, softly awaken, open to hang outside and twist in, unbutton pants and slither, gasp, let out and revel in, shake vigorously, kneel, ready to return. 6. Wake up in a line, turn on in and see, devour and inhale, push back, go around, loose my pants, land in, fill completely and jump, see smiling. If this is, don't wake up. And this last section is a more literal translation from the Asante Twi, which is a Western African language. These are poems by man by the name of Adwanasa Emeyasanan, and I'm just going to read quickly 2 short poems from him. Adam was Asante in bondage. Tied up he was for a day or 1,000 winters more. He swore either was a boar. He was chained up for a cherry that he stole, maybe, or so say old white men holding the books they pounded down our throats. He would not have lifted one pitanga if that woman wasn't around, he says. He offered her golden pedestals in trade for most of the blame. Holy is the time served for the crime of stealing fruits, and many now tear out the roots, singing thanks to a mythical baby. And this last one is called World, I Want Not to See Any More of You. This is also by Emeyasanan. Fire! Fire! This is appropriate. World, I want not to see any more of you. I pity what horror you might say about me. Smiles or frowns, I cast my cares down as my head, quiet here, erase my errors and pick up your mirror. You are faced with mountains fading. Forget me as I forget you. Look, our face is pride. Thank you.